But explain one thing to me. When you left Bishop Street,
yeah,
you left behind the employees. You surely all the employees didn't travel out.
The vast bulk did.
They did?
The vast bulk did, yeah.
So there was a big migration, if you like, out from the centre of the city.
Let me just take a slight detour for a moment, because here's a very interesting thing. Yes, the vast bulk did.
And did they set up house?
Yes, they did. And they came to live in this new town of Tala, which we know today is a big city. But then Tala, originally in Tala, was on the main street. The Dominican Priory was there, and there was a street, Malloy's Pub, I think. And I can remember then by the mid-70s, 75, 76, a lot of people had moved, certainly 77, thinking to myself, there's not even a cinema in this place. I think there was hardly a regular bus service out from Dublin. This was a bloody awful place to live in. New roads were being built, and the road would run through behind a series of houses. The backs of the houses would be facing out of the road, you know. Compare this with the British built Craigavon, I think in the late 50s, early 60s. They put in the infrastructure, shops, cinemas, churches, whatever, first. And then the houses. We did it the other way. We didn't do it. We didn't even plan it. It just happened. Of course, in the early 70s, remember Jimmy Tully and the building the houses and all this kind of stuff. We needed houses. I mean, there were thousands of people living in the tenements in the centre of Dublin. And had to be rehoused. People were moving out, I'd say, from the 50s onwards. In our case, presumably, many people moved because of the factory move. And it... I remember reading a consultant's report, this is some years later, that had been prepared for the board of Jacobs in the 60s. And somebody, very, very wise man, wrote about the impact on the people.
Yes, that was a question. Did it upset the routine of people?
I think it must have upset families, marriage relationships, all kinds. We employed a psychologist. Full time. After he left us, he went to University College Galway, I think, on the staff to try and help people. But I do regret that one was so preoccupied with the financial, the logistic, the physical logistics, the marketing problems, the political problems I talked about, of keeping some very, very good personnel directors, as we call them, those human relation directors, very excellent fellows. But we didn't have the money.
But you were one of the bigger employees. You were one of the big employees in Dublin.
In Dublin.
So surely you would have got political support.
Our turnover in 1971 was £10 million, I think. You know, Abbott's turnover was so many billion or something. Yeah. See, firstly, biscuits are cheap. Secondly, of course, money values are totally different. Yes, we would have got political, but help in those days, if we go back to the mid-70s, state supports were nothing remotely like today. The concern for people wasn't as it is today. The scale of the problem was probably past what an individual company. Now, in fairness to, having said all of that, our people were relatively well paid. Jacob workers were, the women were less well paid.
Yeah.
And when I started first, I think girls paid £7.10, old money, so called €10 a week.
Okay.
But then everything was different. But, the truck drivers, the craftsmen, the bakers, etc., they were well paid people. One of the good things we did, social things and people things, one thing I always had a concern for, and the unions at the time were less interested than the public would be today, pension schemes. Now, the families were very good at providing pensions to retired workers. There was no retirement at 65, maybe go back 50, 60 years. But pensions, but ex gratia payments. The money was paid out of the till, so to say. You know, I mean, there was no pension fund as such. And we did in the early 70s, we did develop pension funds, good pension schemes, dreaded defined benefit, etc. But as a result of which, most people who 25, 30 years worked in Jacobs would have retired with a reasonably good pension, I would hope. But the as we went through the 80s, we had this increasing social tension coming to us from the outside world, by and large. The tension of food industries around us closing down, high inflation, a very difficult national economic situation. The exporting activity that we tried so often to get off the ground wasn't really a runner. Biscuits don't export very well. 95% of all biscuit exports across the world are into neighbouring countries.
But Jacobs were doing it for hundreds of years, 150 years. Yes.
They were. Before, yeah, and they were unique in that regard. They, up to the rupture in the around 1950, they were absolutely unique. There's no doubt. And the people who developed that business, in my view, were extraordinary people. Mm. Quite extraordinary. But but as I said to you, they had advantages.
Mm-hmm.
Part of the empire, very cheap workforce, an ability to buy raw materials wherever they wished across the world.
Were you given the free reins? I mean, at this stage, the Jacobs...
Jacobs had become a public company.
So you were...
In 1971, that was part of the name of the banks. Mm-hmm. That there were two classes of shares. There was A shares and B shares. There were very few A shares.
Yeah.
They had all the votes.
Yeah.
And they're all owned by the families. The B shares owned by insurance companies, pension funds, etc. And part of the deal was everybody got a vote.
Mm-hmm.
So it all changed. The family lost their... Well, they lost the control. I mean, Edward Bewley remained chairman of the company until the late 1970s. Jeffrey Jenkins as well. The financial institutions appointed directors. Mm-hmm. People like Noel Griffin, who was chief executive of Waterford Glass, for instance. Joe Gilroy, general manager of the Bank of Ireland. People of that state, very, very senior people in the industry. Mm-hmm. They joined the board. That was a huge help.
Mm-hmm.
Because they kind of held them. They counterbalance the family. For people like me, as a professional executive, and I suppose I was the only one at that stage, but there was a kind of a counterbalance.
Mm.
Now, there was a certain... The twain never met, you know. Mm. Edward Bewley used to refer to these people as the outside directors. And I can understand where he was coming from. Mm. But back to the yes. 80s, huge social change, huge change in Ireland, huge rundown of domestic industry, and the state put all its money on new foreign multinational industries, and as we see, there were all kinds of things happening apparently the rest of us didn't know about, but long term, in the interests of Ireland, that was a good thing, obviously. It's just a pity that it wasn't possible to salvage domestic indigenous industry.